So, Greg, give me an evaluation of your first 100 days as the City of Fresno Homelessness Prevention Manager.
Give me an evaluation. Well, I think in the first 100 days, there's been a lot of learnings and a lot of work that's gone into really trying to figure out a lot of the players out there and how they kind of fit into the systems or the systems that should be in place. I would kind of give, if I had to give myself a grade, because it looks like we're the professor is asking for a grade, a self-grade. I would say that it's been a B, and only because of the learning curve that's gone into this. But it's been an enjoyable 100 days, kind of beginning to get a lot of the pieces of the puzzle together.
So tell me, how much money is in the current fiscal year for the City of Fresno budget to address homeless issues?
Off the top of my head, I can't tell you the exact figure, but there was, 700 and something thousand left from the that was for Housing First. There is through the emergency service grants, there's 336,000. There was some land acquisition dollars that were set aside from last budget year rolled over into this budget year that were rolled over again, roughly in about the $2 million range.
Greg, explain to me why that money is being rolled over, because obviously there's a huge need for providing homeless people with a place to live. And so if you have money in the budget for the last several years and it just moves forward, and it's not like it's adding to,
right.
And we're not getting more money,
right.
It's just that we again have this much money to spend and again we didn't use it. Explain why that happened.
Well, primarily because no one was really taking the lead on developing housing or developing programming. And since I've been on board since January with the state of the economy and all of the 50 other projects that of great urgency, I too have not had a lot of time to really focus on that. One of the big downsides on the housing part of it is that we don't have the ability by right to build housing for the homeless. It has to go through a CUP process, which is a more cumbersome process, and it's not anything that, it should alarm anyone. It's just the regular planning process. But we are making some amendments to our city municipal code because AB 2, which passed last year in the state assembly, requires that we do this by right. And so we have been meeting on a regular basis to begin that whole thing.
So if I understand right, for the last 2 years, we've had $2 or $3 million designated for property that would be purchased for homeless housing, and we haven't spent that.
Correct.
And we're going to – I haven't seen the budget proposal for the next fiscal year, but I assume that we're going to have the same amount of money in that budget for purchasing property. We've just lost like $4 or $5, $6 million that could have been used for purchasing property that we'll just never have, unless you're proposing to put $6 or $10 million in the next fiscal budget, which I would be surprised if that happened given state of the economy.
Right. You're right. No, actually, with one of those, the Section 108, the $2 million, that's actually a loan against our CDBG funds. And so the best way to make that type of loan process really work is you have to do it in conjunction with other funding streams. So you and think of it more as the advance on a project. And we really haven't had the groundswell and leadership that will produce a project. But that is coming now. There are at least two parcels of land that the city currently owns. One has now been deemed as not a more appropriate site, but the second one is still being vetted. It's unfortunate that the first site kind of didn't work out, but I think the worst part of that was that there was really no one defining what the project was, and by the time it was defined, it was too late to really fully get the community on board with that particular project.
So is that first property that we're talking about, is that the property that is south of the rescue mission on G Street?
No, there's a property owned by the housing department on Van Ness, just south of the 180.
I know what you're talking about.
And that project
near Belmont.
Yeah, and there had been a call for response for proposals, mm-hmm. and one of the proposals had talked about a homeless housing, and they deemed it housing first. However, there was no one ever really in the room to explain that. Here's what it meant. It didn't mean a shelter. It meant housing.
Well, you got some resistance from there was some resistance because people don't want homeless people, a concentration of homeless people in their neighborhood that they already feel is heavily impacted by methadone clinic not far from there, right. And other right. things. So right. The neighbors, and I think you might find that in other areas too. The property I was talking about south of the rescue mission,
which
the city actually did buy, absolutely. And they were going to put a homeless encampment there. There was massive resistance in this area by the business owners.
Absolutely.
And this is an area that it's an industrial section of
right.
old downtown
right.
Fresno. And
right.
still you had resistance there.
Right.
So how are you going to overcome the resistance you're going to find if these encampments or this new housing is going to go just about anywhere?
I think the key with this is that we have to come up with guidelines and property standards, not only for what we decide to do for housing of the homeless, but we need to have that across the board. And since we don't have that, that's one of the things we are looking at doing. Many of our multifamily properties do fall in disrepair, and there's not a way for us as the city to ensure that they stay and are well maintained. And that's one of the things. You always will hear me saying it's not the end user in the housing. It's really about the housing itself. And the more quality, affordable housing that we have, you can put, homeless folks in there, senior folks in there, young folks, workforce folks in there. And that's ought to be our focus. And so that's why we're taking this more global approach with how we do and plan for this housing.
Speaking of the budget, do you have in mind what you're going to put into the budget for next year, the proposed budget for 09 and 10?
Well, I'm fortunate, and the city's fortunate, because we will receive from the Obama administration $3.1 million in homeless prevention and rapid rehousing dollars. Those dollars will be available to the city around October 1st, and in the next week or so, we'll actually begin the public input for what those services look like. The county of Fresno also received a similar allotment. It is based on our emergency service grant dollars. And so our 3.1 over the next 3 years and the county's 1.6, we're going to try to mirror the programming so that they can better help folks in general out there.
Well, so 3.1 and 1.something. Last year's or this fiscal year's budget, there's $6.9 million in the budget this time. Is the city going to also be putting money into the budget for ending homelessness as well, in addition to the federal money and the county money?
There will be monies in the budget. I can't tell you what they are at this point. I'm not involved in the multitude of budgets out there. Much of this money does stretch across departments, but there will be the emergency service grant dollars will be available once again. It's my understanding that the home monies will be available, the $1 million in home monies through the housing department, and the Section 108 monies would be available for that project or projects should we tend to want to use it. And then the rest of it, we have to kind of figure out, what each of those departments kind of vet out and how it ends up bubbling up to the council.
And when will the budget be announced?
The budget actually is released on May the 18th. The mayor will release it on May the 18th, and the first budget hearing will be May the 28th, and that was just released yesterday or day before that. I know they're tweaking some of the days as to how, you know, which departments go which day kind of thing, but mm-hmm. for the most part, that's the budget.
Okay. So just looking at last year's budget, or this current fiscal year's budget, which is almost over.
Almost over, it ends
June 30th. There was $396,000 that went to the Poverello House. I'm thinking that probably most of that went for the tool sheds. If not, correct me. And if so, are you going to propose that the city continue paying the Poverello House to run those tool sheds?
The Poverello contract was a 3-year contract, so we're in the second year of the third year. And it would be my goal that at the end of the third year, we would not need the tool sheds any longer. And Mike, as you know, when I worked on the council side, the council member I worked with adamantly opposed those sheds.
What's her name?
Cynthia Sterling.
Okay.
Council member Cynthia Sterling. And I wasn't, as her chief of staff at that time, I wasn't the happiest camper about those sheds. But I will tell you that there are many folks who are residing in those sheds that are happy for it, and so I'll take that as a win for them. The goal would be to wind up that contract move those folks on to permanent housing.
Greg, if I were to put my child in a tool shed
right.
in my backyard. Right. And made her live in that. No heating, no cooling, no running water. In the summer, it gets to be 110 here.
Right.
It might get to be 140 in those tool sheds. I think that I would probably be arrested for child endangerment. Why can the city support putting homeless people in these tool sheds, which have got to be out of compliance with federal, state, and local zoning ordinances?
I can't answer all that. You'd probably have to sit down with the building department. I can say that when those were proposed, the second group, not the first group, because I worked on the council side during the second group of sheds, that wasn't the answer that we were seeking either. I'm going to continue to work to make sure that those folks who do want to be lifted from shelter, that temporary shelter, although it be a tool shed, if they want to continue to be lifted out and into more permanent housing, that they are included in this discussion.
Another item I'd just like to touch on is the storage. The city of Fresno put in their budget in 2008 $100,000 for storing homeless people's property. That was cleaned up during sweeps. And this year, the 2009 budget, there's $30,000 allocated for that. Do you know if that money was actually used? If so, are you going to continue paying city sanitation to conduct these sweeps and store people's property?
I can't tell you whether the full amount was used. I do think having some storage available is a good thing. I think what we need to do is work on the details of what that storage looks like and continue to work on how folks can better access that storage if it ends up getting stored. The cleanups that do occur right now in the encampments, for instance, every other week there is a trash pickup. We've worked with the encamped residents in Tent City and New Jack and also the Hill to ensure that, we do this in a more proper manner, better in a proper manner. And I think we've been very successful. I mean, as you know, my second day on the job, we had a notice of trespass along Santa Clara and F Street. And, we worked very diligently as a result of that to make sure that, we were treating people with the dignity and respect that they deserve. Now, I can't say that doesn't that there are not problems with how we do conduct our street cleanups or our trash pickups. But I do think we've gotten a lot better. But there are there are areas that we need to refine how we do it and get better at it.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because there was a cleanup just last week on Mariposa.
Correct.
And my understanding is there's about 10 people living there. This is just to the west of City Hall, right in front of the state building there and the old federal building. And periodically, about every month, the city goes through and clears them all out. They largely take their property when they know this is happening, because it's posted.
Right, right.
So they'll leave the night before or early that morning and go somewhere else, wait out the cleanup, and then they'll move right back.
Correct.
Sometimes there are people that are homeless that are living there that, for whatever reason, they're not there when those signs are up and the cleanup happens and their property gets taken and stored. Maybe they're, you know, with a aunt or uncle or living, you know, gone out of the area for a while. They come back, their stuff's gone. I just don't understand how this is helping homeless people. Homeless people don't have any other place to go that's safe and legal to live. So how does periodically going in and taking their things and putting it in storage helpful?
You know, I agree with the first part of what we do, the cleanup of trash and debris. And I will say that particular effort on Mariposa has caused me some pause as to, you know, how we handle it from that point forward. Homeless people that are on the street, they want their trash picked up. In many instances, they're actually, you know, like everyone else, putting it in piles. They're putting it in areas, particularly if there's not a dumpster available, so that it can be removed. And so I think that's the good part. I do think that one of the things we do have to work on, and I said, you know, this hasn't been a perfect 100 days, but it's been a learning, is we need to look at the storage side of it. And that's one of my next things that I'll be sitting down with some of the departments to get a better handle on what happens and how do we do this and under what conditions do we do it.
Let me tell you a little story from my experience of how this works. There was a cleanup. Well, I've been involved in recovering property for homeless people two times.
Okay.
The first time was a cleanup that took place on Olive near West. The city came, they cleaned up an encampment, they took a lot of the property, hauled it away in a large container. That container ended up in the city yard. And I went with a homeless person to recover some of her property. It was a little difficult. That time, the city yard out on El Dorado.
Oh, here, right. I remember this one because
it's hard to find.
Right, you had posted this. This is an Indie Bay posting, and the Community Alliance
video
had done a story.
And everything.
Yes, right.
We went in
video.
That
I remember
sort
this.
Of,
right,
came in with my camera. Went in. It took a while to find the office where this was. We were redirected a couple of times. Finally, ended up talking to somebody who provided an escort out to this container. When we got there, the container was open,
yes.
Had a loose tarp on it.
Right,
it had rained.
One of those nice blue tarps, right.
and all the property in there had been water damaged.
Yeah.
And the person was just appalled that their property wasn't properly stored and secured for them. That's not it's just destroying it in a different way. That's kind of the city got in trouble because they were bulldozing and immediately destroying property. Well, now they stored it and it was destroyed, a couple days later.
Right.
That was a problem. And I think that the city acknowledged that their storage procedures needed to be evaluated. And the next time I went out, they did have it covered. But all the property, and let me tell you this too, when we first went out, they had changed their procedure and they wouldn't immediately take us out to the site. They set up an appointment for a week later or so. And so we had to come back. Now, I got to tell you that most homeless people, you know, they don't have day planners. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for them to get transportation, mm-hmm. and particularly at very specific times.
Absolutely.
So they find the place in the first place, which is hard to do. Then they have to go back there at another time.
Right.
And then all the what we found was that there was a 8x8x40-foot container that was packed with stuff. I mean, and it wasn't all good stuff. There was no separating it. And it was piled 8 feet high. So in order to find anything, you had to literally burrow through it in order to find what you're looking for. And there was cockroaches climbing all over me. It was horrible. Now, I guess my question is, do you think that that is an adequate way to comply with the federal court order of storing property?
Mike, I can assure you that based on this conversation you and I are having,
mm-hmm.
and this is the first one we've had about storage. Otherwise, I would have already had an answer. That I will be looking into the storage procedures and how we can better make them more accessible, and more importantly, what we can do to better store any person's belongings that we pick up. And so, trust me, the next time we get together in about 2 or 3 months, we'll have that one worked out.
Okay, thanks. The discussion about the Mariposa cleanup brings to mind the issue that homeless people literally have no safe and legal place to go. There's hundreds, probably thousands of people living in the downtown area,
mm-hmm.
and there's no safe campground where they can go that they have any basic services like drinking water, toilets. I know there's toilets at the H Street encampment that the city is paying $13,000 a month for,
right.
mostly for security, having a guard watch them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But the city really hasn't established a decent place for homeless people to live in. And these people that are living on the Mariposa Mall, they do not have, they can't move over and stay in a safe, legal campgrounds, even if they wanted to. There's no place for them to go. What is your position on the city providing homeless people with a campground that would at least temporarily give them the opportunity to be safe and have drinking water and a place to use the restroom?
You know, when we tried this 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago to this month, in that that area south of the rescue mission, and the city faced a lot of resistance, not only from the immediate property owners who tried to run us out on the rail, but the homeless also. And so in my learnings over the last 2 years, one of the things that I think that we have all agreed upon is that we need to focus on housing first. And so that is our first and primary effort. I do think, though, that this conversation continues to come up. And so with some of the policymakers, we're going to need to maybe vet this one more time. I just don't know if there is the political will to go backwards. And I think if we do go backwards into the campgrounds, we're going to lose the momentum on the housing first side of it. Look, you know, we're talking about 7 council members and 5 members of the board. We're talking about some of the toughest economic times that the county has ever faced and soon the city will ever face. And I think if our momentum is about housing, then we ought to put all of our ducks focused that way and expedite what we're doing there. I continue to have an open mind. I continue to, hear this conversation, but I'm continuing to focus on housing first. And, you know, if it comes the time where we need to look at another alternative, that means we haven't been successful in housing first, of course.
Well, even the city's best estimate of ending homelessness is 10 years away.
You know, I hear that a lot. And so let me just talk about the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. The 10-year plan in chronic homelessness is a guide. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to take 10 years. And actually, at some point this summer, after an evaluation of my first 6 months or so, I plan to actually tweak a number of the timelines because I'll have a better understanding of what and how fast we can do certain things. But the 10-year planning is a roadmap developed by community citizens and presented and adopted by both the city and the county. And it gives us a roadmap of what we need to do. It doesn't say that we have to take all 10 years to do it. It just says, here are the things that we need to focus on. Cost-benefit analysis, housing first, meeting the unmet need of shelter. It specifically talks about, you know, housing over shelters. And trust me, I am a 100% housing advocate. I am not a shelter advocate. I don't think that we should waste any time building another shelter or shelter space, with the exception of if the POV decided that they wanted to build something in replace of those tub sheds, or the rescue mission or one of the other providers said we wanted to rebuild a current or existing facility like Marjorie Mason.
Okay. I want to get back and talk to that shelter versus housing first model.
Sure.
Because I think that is a critical new way of looking at things, moving in the direction of housing first. And I think you're absolutely right that it's housing that we need to focus on, and that's what's going to end homelessness, is when we get homeless people off the street and into housing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My point is that it's going to take time to do that. This isn't going to happen soon. I hope it doesn't take 10 years, but even if it just took 3 years, you're still going to be in a situation where there are people that are on the street and they have no legal and safe place to live. And in essence, what is happening to those people is that they're being criminalized because they are, wherever they camp, it's illegal.
Right.
And they can be swept up. There's this insecurity with living on the streets, that you have no place to go that is your own and that's safe and legal and that has running water, has a portable toilet or a regular toilet.
What if we got to the point where we didn't allow people to spiral down to the street, that we started to work with folks before they ended up to that place? Because, you know, as you and I both know, in working with the homeless and talking with them, you just don't go from a house one day straight to the street. There's a series of things that happen. And so at some point, someone has to step up and say, we need to close some of those doors. And of course, that safety net, you would have thought, would have been the service providers who are already funded to do the job, particularly the county, right?
Well, Greg, you're not going to get any disagreement from
right,
me.
Right,
there should
right.
be a safety net so that people don't
five,
end up
six safety
on the
nets,
street.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
But the reality is that they're there. There are thousands of homeless people on the streets in Fresno that are living illegally because there is no safe place for them to go. What I'm trying to get you to acknowledge is that there needs to be a safe, legal place for people that acknowledges the reality that we have and that people are on the street very short term, to get them into secure campgrounds so that they could then be transitioned into better housing. And until you have a campground where those people can go, they're out there and conditions are much worse for them.
No, for the radio listeners, Mike and I have this ongoing conversation, and this is always a good dialogue. So trust me, we love each other, and we're working with each other. But I just think that the political will of this community, I mean, just look how long it took us to get you know, four porta potties and what we had to do to get the four porta potties, right? I just know the political will of this community. If they're focused on one thing, then we ought to shoot for that. And when we can't obtain that, or there's some time estimates, then we need to come back to a fallback position. And I don't quite think we're there yet.
Okay. Just incidentally, what it took to get those portable toilets out at that encampment was conservative city council member Jerry Duncan and I agreeing that there was a need to do that.
Wow, and earth shaking.
And that brought people together. And it was this acknowledgement that everybody's better off when health and safety needs are addressed, and it's good for businesses in the area, it's good for the residents in the area, and it's good for the homeless people, because everybody wins. You know, you're not having business owners disturbed by having to clean up messes in front of their property every day, and homeless people actually have some place to go to the bathroom and trash bins there that get emptied. It's good for everybody, and that's really all I'm trying to.
And it's interesting because over that time, that 3-month period, that was March, April, May of approximately, 2 years ago that occurred, because it was right after the homeless marathon. Mm-hmm. So it took us, 9 months, 9.5 months to actually have a joint meeting with the county. It took us in that 3-month period, the bathrooms was back and forth. The and the trade-off on the bathrooms was that they had to have a guard. That was the trade-off on the bathroom. That way it didn't get vetoed. Then Council Member Sterling put forth 3 or 4 measures, one to buy vacant or foreclosed apartment buildings or motels, defeated by the council. She then put forth an ideal to do land, vacant land, defeated by the council. And then we get to the small little piece of land that the city and the RDA found south of G Street that, you know, was kind of put out there as a possible place. So in that little stretch, there was a lot of things going on. But again, the political will only allowed 2 things to occur. The purchase of that property along railroad and whatever it is down there, and the porta potties. That was it. And then we didn't have the political will again until we got to the joint meeting, which led off to a kickoff effort, and then until the adoption of the 10-year plan in last September.
Well, I think with your position now, that is an indication to me from the city council that they want to go in a new direction.
Absolutely.
And they have empowered you to move the city and work with the county in this new direction of housing first. And I see that as a very clear turning point in this whole issue on how to address homelessness, because until now the basic strategy has been to maintain the status quo, and you just provide enough food, and you know, I can't say provide enough shelter, because I don't think there's ever been enough shelter in Fresno.
No, and no one disagrees with that. There's never been enough, whether it's emergency shelter or transition shelter. There's always been an overwhelming need for more.
So the revelation is that we could actually spend less on homelessness and get people off the street by providing them with housing connected with services.
Absolutely.
Explain that concept a little bit for our listeners.
From a cost benefit standpoint, it is cheaper for a municipality, a government, whether it's the city or the county, to provide housing than it is for the policeman to respond to a call for service, to the firemen to aid whatever service, to the ambulance driver responding and then sending someone to the hospital, the county hospital, in this case, community medical, regional medical center, providing whatever the Band-Aid and assessment that they're going to provide. It's easier and cheaper to provide the housing. And then with the housing, you get away from a lot of those other things that may pop up when you have large encampments with people on top of one another.
And Philip Mungano from Washington, D.C., he's the national coordinator of homeless issues for the administration. He's still in.
He's still with the administration.
Okay, I didn't know if he was
made that transition
or not.
He's made that transition.
But he tells a story about homeless people in San Diego, I think it is, where they followed a couple of homeless people and the amount of resources that went into treating their medical issues, the policing, just the whole thing. The conclusion that he came to, or that this study came to, in which Philip Mangano repeats, is that for the same amount of money that the city used to maintain their homelessness, they could have put them in a luxury condominium on the beachfront and provide them with concierge service and a limousine for transportation. And they would have still spent less than they did keeping them homeless.
Well, you have that study. You have Million Dollar Murray, which is a study of two Reno police officers. Who followed a guy named Murray over a course of a number of years. And one day they were sitting in the ER with Murray, and one of the officers, I believe he was married to the charge nurse or one of the nurses in ER, they began to figure out how much Murray had cost the county and the city. And so they went back to their superiors and began some efforts to do something a little bit different. LA City and County right now are doing what they call Project 50, where they are tracking the top 50 homeless folks who use and ricochet throughout the maze of county services and city services down there. And they're soon to come out, I guess, with that study as to here's what those folks have cost and what it, you know, the cost benefit of what it could have cost just to house them.
So what was the upshot of the Reno study?
The Reno study with Million Dollar Murray, unfortunately, Murray ended up passing away after getting his life together and working for a period of time. But with Reno, what they now do is their police department has a homeless outreach team. They have homeless outreach workers who, when they make contact with someone on the streets, try to provide the sheltering and the services immediately to get someone from the streets into a home.
This is a good transition for talking about the new vouchering program that the city of Fresno is getting ready to implement. At least that's my understanding.
Yes, yes.
There's an encampment on H Street just south of Ventura that has 200, maybe 300 homeless people that are living in it. And you have been working in that encampment doing a evaluation of people. And tell us a little background about that and tell us the timeline that will be implemented to put people in housing, how many people will be put into housing, where that housing will be, and for how long.
The city has over the last 3.5-4 weeks, been working with a couple of nonprofit service providers to do an assessment of those individuals. I mean, everyone has talked about, well, who's over there and, you know, what's going on with them and how many people and how many of them are green and how many of them are blue and how many are men and how many are women. So we've begun that process to figure out, okay, who physically lives in these encampments? Where do they live? Are they on the H Street side in the two encampments there, New Jack or Tent City? Are they on the G Street side on the hill? Are they living along Santa Clara or F Street in one of the tents? And we even surveyed the Village of Hope and the Community of Hope just so that, you know, I didn't want anyone if running out of a tough shed thinking they were missing out on something, but hope to include them in lifting them out if they want to move from there into housing. And so that assessment process is just about completed, and we're now working with the Housing Authority to begin to match up folks with scattered site housing. The Housing Authority has identified some 70 apartment units throughout the city of Fresno, and we hope to match those units with folks that are out on the street. And there are a number of hotel and motels that may be used for some transitional service because not everyone's ready to, you know, leave H Street today and move right into an apartment. There may be some, we may need to help wrap some services around them to get them ready. We may need to help them find get their IDs and whatever else is out there that they may be lacking. We hope that folks will begin to see this housing program in full earnest in the very, I don't know, next 2 weeks or so. The Housing Authority and I were working on the timeline. We meet again in the next day or so to kind of narrow down a few things that need to be done. And then the assessment part of it will be done. The goal is to take some of the most vulnerable folks out first. We've got a number of pregnant women in the encampments. We've got some seriously medically fragile folks that are out there, as well as looking at some of those folks who have some steady income, but just don't have the ability to get first and last, or may need some assistance in navigating the housing system. Hope to lift those out and then continue that process throughout. There's only $550,000that's available. However, the Housing Authority does have some other programmatic funds that could be available. So, for example, you may take me from the encampment, move me into housing, help, you know, finish my the process for me to get SSI, or maybe general relief and food stamps, and as a result of that, then maybe I'm eligible for some other programming and services, and then they're able to match what those other folks do through a housing voucher. And so the goal is to get everyone out of the encampments, and to do it in a thoughtful and orderly process. What I can't say is how long that's going to take, and how many people ultimately we're going to serve, because not everyone, we had collected 237 assessments as of last week, and not everyone is desirous of moving out. And so we need to still kind of muddle through to figure out, well, how many of these folks that we've talked to really don't want to move? How many of them do want to move, and how many of them are looking to move to someplace different?
You say people don't want to move, is that a couple of people, or are you talking about large numbers of people that don't want to move out of the encampment?
You know, I don't have the final numbers yet, but there's and it's not necessarily the encampment, because we did the village and community, the tool shed cities. Some of those folks may not want to move, and they've made it very clear, I don't want to move. You know, I like it here. I'll participate in what you're doing. But I wanted to keep it as open as possible, because you may decide, well, today I'm not really interested in that program, but maybe tomorrow you may change your mind. And there are some people who are living in the encampments, a very small number, it appears so far, that don't want, housing. They just like, living on the street, or if that's your choice, then we will work with those who want to be lifted out.
So, are there limitations on who's eligible for this, or is everybody who wants to move out of the encampment eligible to move out? And I'm thinking of there may be people that are undocumented workers.
Right. Well, right now, we've got a number of folks down there who don't have any ID. So as far as we're concerned, if you're living south of Ventura, around the Monterey Street and Bridge, and you've gone through this assessment process, you're eligible for what we're trying to do, okay? And we will work with you as best we can. And like I say, a large number of folks that I talk to on a very regular basis, say, look, I haven't had an ID in years. I've got a library card and this kind of card, but I don't have a federal or state-issued ID card. And one young man was actually born in Michigan, and so we're going to have to ultimately work with the Michigan authorities to get his information so that he can, be found and get a California ID card. So, and that's all the things that a landlord's going to want to see too. So
people will be placed in apartments, possibly houses.
Right. The apartments are all scattered site. There are none that are concentrated in any one mm-hmm. location. They're as far north as the Bullard Fig Garden area. I think there's some units in southeast Fresno, some in northwest Fresno, and some in central Fresno.
So is there a limitation on the cost of these, or can somebody say, I want to live in the nicest apartment in Fresno, and you'll do that?
We were working with some property owners that say, look, I have some stock available, and I'm willing to work with you. And so that's where we're starting. We're not starting with folks who you know, X, Y, and Z complex on the bluffs who, you know, who are only looking for, you know, perfect credit and, you know, $1,200 a month, you know, for a one bedroom fully furnished. We're not working with those folks. We're working with property owners who are going to work with us because this is a population that and this project is such a pilot and pioneering kind of project that, you know, not everyone's going to be able to get right through the door through the traditional, do you have your ID? Do you have, you know, three references? Do you have all this? You know, and what's your steady stream of income? That's not the group that we're working with.
So help me understand this. There is $6.9 million, which has been designated for homelessness in the city of Fresno this year. But we haven't used anywhere near as that much. And yet we're not able to spend that on housing for the homeless. And you say you're limited to how much? 550,000?
It's 550 for this effort, for this,
so
this pilot project.
Why can't you transfer money from some of the programs that you didn't spend it on into this in order to get more people out for longer?
Well, for example, $3 million of that money is restricted for the building of the building or use within CDBG designated areas. $2 million of that $3 million, which is the Section 108 money, has to be guaranteed by your CDBG funds over the, in future years. The $1 million in home funds is only for the development and building of structures. And so we're restricted in that area. And then a lot of the other programming, you know, whether it is community sanitation, whether it's the Poverello contract, that money was already locked in and there was no way to wiggle it free. You know, the one thing I did try to figure out a way is, you know, how could we wind down the whole porta potty guard? Because we could have used a portion of that money easily, and but we weren't able. We're not in a position to do that as fast as I wanted to try to do that.
So, what I hear you saying is that there's a limited portion of the money that's designated for this particular project, which is I would identify as housing first.
Yes. Yeah.
And that you don't know how many people there are going to be that will be a part of this. And so therefore you don't know how many months rent this will cover. So is it possible that people could be out for 1 month and then be back on the street again?
No. The way this is going to work is that if when Greg gets housing and say I am not receiving any other entitlements, but here I am a disabled person and I'm eligible for Social Security, we're going to make sure that we work our darndest to get your Social Security that you should have already been receiving. In the meantime, you may be eligible for general relief or food stamps. And so we're going to help, you know, Greg navigate that system. When we get to the point where there's a funding stream available, similar to how Section 8 works, you will take a percentage of my income and apply that toward the rent. So I may start off at 100% subsidy of a $500 rent, all right? And in 3 months, may only be paying 200 of that because I'm paying some portion of it, or some other programs or entitlements are paying for a portion of that. And then you take the rest of that savings and you apply it back to the next person.
So who is going to be bird dogging this to make sure people get their SSI or their veterans benefits? Because that is a huge problem out there.
Correct.
People are... There are veterans that are languishing out
Absolutely.
There because they don't know how to navigate
Absolutely.
Through the system. They
Absolutely.
Need somebody to take them by their hand
Absolutely.
And help them get the services they're entitled
Absolutely.
To. Who's
going
to do that?
Well, one of the things that we're building into this discussion with the Housing Authority is the Housing Authority does have staff that works on this on a periodic basis for their existing clients. And we're talking about how we augment those services and that assistance with the housing department's resources, so that housing authority's resources, so that we get more of that case management, because that's what it's going to end up being, more of the case management things that go on. And we have now we've developed a relationship with the employment and temporary assistance staff, the leadership over within the county, who are going to work with us to get our folks in line, not so that they have to stand in line at 7:30. But, you know, if we get them, we're going to work on getting them over on certain days. Their staff can help them, you know, get their paperwork taken care of. And so that will be a great benefit because, as you said earlier, you know, to tell a homeless person to be back 3 weeks from today is not a good thing. But if you've got a case manager that says, okay, this is our plan for the week, and then next week we have a new plan, and who's following up with you to make sure that you made it to that appointment. And if you've got a barrier to transportation, we want to make sure that we get you wherever you need to go, or have that service come to you. And we think that this is in this pilot project, we think that this is a tool that's really going to work.
Great. Well, Greg, I want to thank you for this interview. And if you have anything you'd like to add, take a minute or two to say that.
I just want to say thank you again to you, Mike. You know, for those who are listening, Mike is the one who introduced me to this whole concept of Housing First. And little did I know that I'd be taking on this tremendous job. But Mike and a number of the other advocates that are out there have really welcomed me with open arms. We have our dialogue and our discussions, but we're keeping we're going to keep working together because the ultimate goal is to house folks. And however we get there, no one's going to argue when it's all said and done that it was my way or the right way or the best way. We could have gotten here faster. We just want to get there. And I think as long as we keep that understanding, we'll be fine.
Great. We've been speaking with Greg Barfield, who is the City of Fresno Homelessness Prevention Manager. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.